This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is a marketing communication, not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Past performance does not predict future returns, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only. References made to individual securities does not constitute a recommendation to buy, sell or hold any security, investment strategy or market sector, and should not be assumed to be profitable. Janus Henderson Investors, its affiliated advisor or its employees may have a position in the securities mentioned, not for distribution in European Union member countries. My name is Andrew Chiguri, and today I'm joined by Nicholas Ware, who is the co-portfolio manager of the Henderson Diversified Income Trust. Today, we'll be talking about how the trust has performed so far this year, areas where he's finding opportunities, and how he's navigating interest rate and inflation risk in this volatile market environment. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's been a difficult time for global fixed income markets and investors in general. Monetary policy is changing as central banks navigate the new era of quantitative tightening. And this is amid rising geopolitical tensions, rising inflation, and elevated recession concerns. On such a backdrop, how has the trust performed yet to date, and how have you been navigating such a market environment?
So it's fair to say that the company's had a difficult year. It's been a difficult period, I think, for financial markets. They've been dealing with a number of factors, including rising inflation pressures, growth is slowing globally, the Russia-Ukraine conflict, strict China COVID lockdowns. And then you've also, on top of that, you've got the hawkish central banks. They were late at spotting this kind of inflation pressure, first claiming it's transitory, and are now in a panic trying to catch up with rate hikes. So that's meant it's been a quite a tricky move for fixed income specifically. This has led to both spreads moving wider as well as sovereign yields at the same time. So the sell-off has been turbocharged. That's very unusual for fixed income. Usually you have spreads moving in one direction and the sovereigns moving in the other direction. That hasn't been the case in this instance.
In what seems to be a very difficult market environment, where are you finding opportunities at the moment?
We are cautious on Europe and the UK. We think they're either in or heading into recession, despite fiscal efforts to offset this energy price shock that's going through the system at the moment. The US, when we speak about that market, it's more of a 2023 story in terms of will they go into soft landing, which we think is unlikely, or going into recession. We do a lot of economic cycle work on the desk, and that tends to indicate that we think credit spreads are biased wider from where we are at the moment. So currently you've got EURIG at 194 basis points, Euro high yield at 545, USIG at 146, and US high yield at 478. So particularly in the US market, they're not actually discounting in a slowdown, whereas I think Europe, they are to a certain extent. So what we've done for the company is we've repositioned the portfolio, and we've been doing that through the year. We've been buying more investment grade, and also we've been reduced down the gearing in the fund, so taking down the overall risk in the fund. Arguably, I would say we've probably been a bit early when we're looking at where the indices are trading. For example, USIG year to date has returned minus 15.2% versus US high yield of minus 10.7% year to date. So I think the market has been battling whether this is going to be a soft landing and when the Fed's going to pivot. And that, I think, is unusual in a slowdown that IG is underperforming high yield. Where we see the best opportunities, we think high quality franchises in double B and triple B rating is where we're going to find them.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned high yield and IG there, because I think looking at the portfolio since February in 2020, that allocation between high yield and IG credit, that's been converging. Your exposure to investment grade has been going up, whilst your exposure to high yield has also been going down. What has been driving that rotation?
So a reference to economic cycle work that we do. So what we try and do with this fund is we increase allocation to high yield when we think the economy is turning and going to do better. And then we increase IG when we think the economy is softening and going to get worse. So that's very simply what we try and do. For example, if we look back into history, into COVID in 2020, we were increasing through the end of 2019, early 2020, our investment grade allocation. And that helped protect investors through that period. And then post that, so late March, early April in 2020, we aggressively switched into high yield and also went long crossover to take advantage of the opportunities that presented themselves as credit spreads had gone wider. Now, our lead indicators, including amongst them, you can look at money supply, housing data, yield curves, all flashing red now. And that's dictating that we're going to get more defensive. We are now waiting on what's called coincident indicators. That means real-time indicators such as profit and employment, as two examples. They are beginning to turn over, but you know that's coming through, and sometimes it can be a bit frustrating in terms of the timing of it. But you know, encouragingly, from our viewpoint, you had yesterday both Eastman Chemical in the US and Dow Chemical in the US issued profit warnings on their Q3 earnings. So there was a big chemicals conference going on in the US. And what they crucially both cited was weaker European demand, especially weak in Q3 2022. And they referenced construction as being one of the weaknesses and also a slower Chinese recovery. So I think it is coming through. I think we were expecting it to come through into Q2, but I think it's more of a Q3 and Q4 story.
I think another interesting trend that's been playing out within the portfolio is short-dated bonds. Looking at the portfolio, you've been increasing that over the last few years. What are the potential benefits of short-dated corporate bonds in a rising interest rate environment?
From our perspective, particularly now that yield curves are inverted, so that means, for example, if we look at the US, the 2 years yielding 3.82 versus a 10-year, which is yielding 3.44. So you're getting actually more if you buy the 2 year sovereign in the US. So what that basically means is that as a risk taker, I can go out and buy short-dated corporate paper. So like a high-quality UK bank that issues senior paper into the US at 5.5% with a 3-year maturity. I don't need to go out much further in terms of taking risk in this type of environment. So that's actually good for us, but it's also an impediment to corporates because they can't really go out and fund longer, so they end up issuing shorter dated pieces of paper, which are less risky by their very nature.
So within corporate credit, how are you balancing wider spreads with rising recession risk at the moment?
So, you know, our credit investing style is a sensible income approach that we use. So what we try and look for is non-cyclical, stable businesses with good free cash flow yields that can navigate through the downturn. What we do avoid in this trust is we avoid the heavy cyclicals, old analog type of businesses that are going out of fashion or going out of business. And the skill for us as fund managers is to try and avoid defaults in this portfolio.
I think it's pretty difficult to have a conversation without talking about inflation now. Inflation risk is one of the key elements that's driving, you know, some of the current repricing that we're seeing in the markets today. How are you thinking about inflation risk today and for the cyclical horizon as well?
I would say the start of an interest rate rising cycle, which we've been in to combat this inflation cycle that we're seeing, is a very challenging period for fixed income investors. What we are seeing at the moment is a very unusual cycle. I think it's the return to this boom bust economics that we saw in the 80s, where during COVID you had both fiscal and monetary support, which has produced this inflation and necessitates central banks putting the brakes on now. So that was the overstimulation part with the monetary and fiscal support. And now we're going into the policy overkill. So on the other side, I think it's tricky for fixed income, but it's also tricky for all risk assets because they will reprice.
An interesting thing about inflation, like the UK and Europe, energy represents a smaller source of inflation than the US. However, services and core goods inflation in the US is a lot higher compared to Europe. Has the US got a domestic inflation issue and is it starting to peak now?
Yes and yes are the answer to those questions. In the US, we had the August CPI report coming out earlier this week, and I think everyone was expecting the inflation to collapse, and that didn't quite happen. So the US CPI came in hotter than expectations, with headline up 0.1 month over month and 8.3 year over year. So the headline numbers coming down in the US. But what was slightly worrying was that the core CPI started ticking up again. So that's related to services and particularly shelter. And shelter tends to be a very lagging indicator. So despite the US housing market having turned over, shelter inflation takes a lot longer to turn over. And that's what we're seeing at the moment. So we're seeing in the US, it's peaking and has peaked and it's coming off, but it's coming off slower than what some people were expecting. But encouragingly, I don't think there exists a new inflation story in the US. It's just taking a time to turn over from a very high level.
I think what's interesting is Fed officials have been sounding a lot more hawkish recently and seem to imply that progress towards taming inflation hasn't been as uniform or as fast as they would like. What are the implications for credit investors of a rising interest rate environment?
So it's a difficult environment for risk assets. I think markets during the summer were getting excited by potential Fed pivots, but I think it's too soon to expect that given what's going on with the employment data and what we saw in the August CPI report. Fed has been tightening financial conditions, which is difficult for risk assets. We think the Fed is saying to investors to get defensive, and that's certainly what we've been doing for this company.
Based on the current macro and micro environment, some of the factors which we've just discussed, is the recession now a base case, and is the data pointing towards a soft or a hard landing?
I think if we look across the global economy, you have three locomotives of relatively similar size. You've got Europe, China, and the US. I think China have got issues with their COVID policy, and they've also got internal problems with their property market, which is dampening that particular economy. Eurozone and the UK have got the energy issue filtering through. The only one that's kind of holding up at the moment is the US. But even in the US, our leading indicators suggest that a downturn is likely to happen soon. But like I said earlier, I think that might be more of a 23 story. Will it be a hard or soft recession? That's too early to call because there's a lot of variables around which type of recession we'll have.
As you've pointed out, a downturn is going to be happening at some point, either in 2022 or 2023. So with a downturn on the cards, do you expect default rates to start picking up as inflation and slow economic growth start to impact company revenues and margins?
I do. But what I will say is this, it's a very lagging indicator. So when you hear high yield investors coming in and pitching their product and saying, buy my asset class because of low defaults, I would discount that because that's really reflecting what's happened historically rather than what's likely to happen in the future. But from here, defaults are incredibly low, and I think they've got one way of going, which is they're going to go up.
Just before we finish, I'd like to touch on ESG. You've long considered ESG factors within your investment approach. However, this has now been formalized. What does the enhanced, if you want to call it that, ESG approach, you know, mean for the trust?
So the ESG restrictions were approved by shareholders. It really hasn't changed how we invest. So just to give you a broad brush on our ESG policy, some of them are, we avoid investing in companies that buy fur, controversial weapons. We've also got a cap of the company can't generate more than 10% from energy. And that kind of removes about 15% of the global high yield. And then we also use the Freedom House. So we don't invest into countries which are not considered free. That, for example, kept us out of Russia, so we avoided that. But as you know, this company doesn't actually own any EM assets. That's not what we do. We invest into developed markets. So I would say not really a huge change from historically.
How does your ESG approach now work in conjunction with your sensible income approach?
Our sensible income approach typically avoids these sectors anyway, so it goes hand in hand with our sensible income approach. I would say the team have always stayed clear of the more cyclical and resource intensive sectors, so no change.
Well, thank you for joining us, Nicholas. That's all we have time for today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulated record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited. Reg number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate in London, EC2M3AE. And regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, and Henderson Management S.A. Reg number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitbourg, L1273 Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Monetary policy, the policies of a central bank, aimed at influencing the level of inflation and growth in an economy. It includes controlling interest rates and the supply of money. Monetary stimulus refers to a central bank increasing the supply of money and lowering borrowing costs. Monetary tightening refers to central bank activity aimed at curbing inflation and slowing down growth in the economy by raising interest rates and reducing the supply of money. Quantitative tightening, QT, refers to monetary policies that contract, or reduce, the Federal Reserve System, Fed, balance sheet. This process is also known as balance sheet normalization. In other words, the Fed, or any central bank, shrinks its monetary reserves by either selling treasuries, government bonds, or letting them mature and removing them from its cash balances. This removes liquidity, or money, from financial markets. Spread, the difference in the yield of a corporate bond over that of an equivalent government bond. Yield, the level of income on a security, typically expressed as a percentage rate. For equities, a common measure is the dividend yield, which divides recent dividend payments for each share by the share price. For a bond, this is calculated as the coupon payment divided by the current bond price. Gearing is the measure of a company's debt level. It is also the relationship between a company's leverage, showing how far its operations are funded by lenders versus shareholders. Within investment trusts, it refers to how much money the trust borrows for investment purposes. Yield curve, a graph that plots the yields of similar quality bonds against their maturities. In a normal/upward sloping yield curve, longer maturity bond yields are higher than short-term bond yields. A yield curve can signal market expectations about a country's economic direction. Cyclical stocks, companies that sell discretionary consumer items, such as cars, or industries highly sensitive to changes in the economy, such as miners. The prices of equities and bonds issued by cyclical companies tend to be strongly affected by ups and downs in the overall economy, when compared to non-cyclical companies. Free cash flow, FCF, represents the cash a company generates after accounting for cash outflows to support operations and maintain its capital assets. Unlike earnings or net income, free cash flow is a measure of profitability that excludes the non-cash expenses of the income statement and includes spending on equipment and assets as well as changes in working capital from the balance sheet. ESG, environmental, social and governance, ESG, or sustainable investing considers factors beyond traditional financial analysis. This may limit available investments and cause performance and exposures to differ from, and potentially be more concentrated in certain areas than the broader market.